Let's see, did that work? Did I start my recorder? I did. Okay, great. So now I'm going to switch over to the PowerPoint. Thanks for your comment, Lorraine. I really appreciate that. Okay. So let's see if we get lucky and this thing is working. Hopefully it will be. Oops, wrong PowerPoint. Ah, silly me. Okay, that's a great PowerPoint, but it's the wrong one. I heard somebody chuckling. Here's the right one. Now it probably won't work. I'll have to do one more iteration. Let's see. Oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God. All right, so as you know, we're going through the different studies that we use to help people to become a Christian. All right, we have four different study series. One for people who have left and gone away for a while. Restoration studies. We have another set of studies that we do with everybody we baptize. Our new Christian follow-up studies. And then for those we're reaching out to who we suspect very likely are not saved, we have two sets of studies. For the people who don't have much introduction to the Bible, don't know a lot about Jesus, we do the Jesus studies. And we went over that a couple years ago, and now we're going over the other one. The one that probably, I would guess, something like this is probably something that a large majority of us went through something pretty similar. Okay? So for people who have a fair amount of religious background, probably would say they believe in Jesus. In fact, it's fairly likely they even would say that they believe the Bible's from God. People who've gone to church, that kind of stuff. That's what we do, His Steps Bible Study Series. And that's what we're doing now. All right, so here's the information. If you don't have a copy, Jan has made some awesome pamphlets. We sell them for $5. We'll probably have them again, but that won't be for 4 weeks now. That's when we're going to do the sin study, okay? So they're at the Bakersfield Church of Christ. No problem. Okay. So here's our study series that we're going through. And this is the traditional order, the one that's been used for many years. First, it's optional. If you want to kind of do an introduction to the Bible, just kind of see if people are really interested in studying, we do a Seeking God study. If somebody's solid, they really want to study, you may not do that. And almost always then we start with the word study. We want to establish the authority of the scriptures before we actually study the scriptures. Then what we've done for a while is we've done the discipleship study next. Remember I talked about 2 weeks ago, I'm not a huge fan of doing the discipleship study next. Jan and I were at a leadership meeting in Flagstaff last week. And the leaders from Texas got up and said they've changed that a long time ago. So they do what we call the cross study and the light and darkness study before they do discipleship. Their idea is that before you call somebody to be a disciple, you need to have them convicted about Jesus. There's no right answer to this. This change was made many years ago, but that's when this study series was being used, honestly, to kind of weed out the people who weren't super open. But we don't want to judge people in that way. So, anyway, the main thing is to know these studies. Honestly, I'll tell you the truth. Anybody you take through these three studies, in any order you do it, and if they believe and accept what it says, I'm telling you, you're on the way towards them becoming a Christian. Okay? But, again, while I personally prefer to do the cross and the sin study before discipleship, I myself have done discipleship first many times, even since being here. Okay, got it? But tonight, we're doing the cross study before the light and darkness study. Similar idea, okay? Because it seems to me, in order to call somebody to conviction about their sin, they might want to know what their sin did, which is put Jesus on the cross. All right? Again, whatever order you choose, the main thing is this, brothers and sisters, ask somebody to study the Bible. All right? Ask them to study the Bible. Please. We've all made a commitment. We made a commitment this fall to get in at least one study with somebody. I mean, I hope you did. I certainly asked you to. So tonight we're going to do, Blaine and I, by the way, Blaine's going to step in there a bit, and we're going to do what we call the cross study. This is by far the easiest study to understand, to do, and to use. It's the most intense of all the studies, probably, but it's, you could memorize this study in 5 minutes and never forget it. It's impossible, honestly, practically, to forget the scriptures in the cross study. All right? By the way, here's the alternative order that you could use if you wanted to. If you want to. Okay, seeking God, word, cross, light and darkness, discipleship, salvation, sound doctrine, which is a doctrinal thing, then the church, and then we count the cost. Okay? So let's talk about the cross study. The purpose of the cross study is to get people to understand what Jesus did for them and their need for Jesus and his forgiveness. If you asked around at people who were members of our church, more people would say that the cross study is the thing that turned them around, turned them towards Christ, helped them to decide to become a Christian than any other study that we do. I've not done a systematic scientific analysis, but I'm quite confident that that is the case. So you want to know how to do a cross study, right? One of the great things about the cross study is every single time you do it, unless you're just a hard-hearted wretch or whatever, it is awesome for all of us to do a cross study, all right? Because being brought back to the cross is a really good thing. Now, this study primarily is reading Matthew 26 and 27. That's really what it is. That's why you don't have to memorize some kind of an outline. You don't even have to memorize questions, really. You can make them up as you go along. Okay? But when you're reading, make it personal. What I like to do is I like to actually put the names of the people in the study into the reading. If you look at the outline that Jan publishes for us, she suggests doing that during the Isaiah 53 passage. That's fine. All right, but as you're going through the cross study, talk about how it makes you feel, how it's affected you. Because we're trying to get people, honestly, to have an emotional response. We're looking for an emotional response. That doesn't mean they necessarily are crying, but we're looking for somebody to be affected by what they read. Okay, so basically then, I'm just going to model the cross study. That's all I'm going to do. We almost should have just done it like, I see Juan, have you done the cross study yet? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Have you done the cross study yet, Juan? He's done, because we could have just done the cross study with Juan. That would have been a good way to go. He's already done it. All right, well then, you're it. This is cross study number two for you, Juan. So let's go to Matthew 26. Josh is really good at doing the cross study. I'm sure Joelle is as well. I've just never been in on a cross study with her. All right, Josh has a nice outline. The one I use is slightly different. By the way, in doing the readings, you want to divide it up. And I think whoever did the NIV divisions, you know, the little subtitles, they divided it up perfect. So I can't improve on that. So I don't worry about it. I just read to the next section. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to start by reading Matthew 26, 36 through 46. Got it? So then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him and began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken from me unless I drink it, may your will be done." When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and he went away once more and he prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to his disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come. The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." And the outline that Josh uses is this is a period of emotional pain. There's no physical pain. There's emotional pain. And so typically what I would do is I'd go back to verse 38 where it says, Jesus says, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." Then you could ask the person, "Have you ever been overwhelmed with sorrow?" Or maybe, you know, let's say Josh and Juan are doing the study. I'd say, "Josh, have you ever been overwhelmed with sorrow?" Then what I typically do is I'd ask the person that we're studying with, I ask, "Why do you think, what do you think it is that is overwhelming Jesus with sorrow right now?" A typical response would be because he knows he's about to die. All right. And I come around to expressing my personal opinion. My personal opinion is because he knows the sin of the whole world, the sin of Juan, the sin of John, and the sin of Josh. The sin of the whole world is going to fall on him. And Jesus is going to be forsaken by God and abandoned by God. And in the Luke account, it says he was sweating and it was so intense, his emotion was so intense, that his sweat was mixed with blood. This is what Jesus went through for you, Juan. This is what Jesus went through for me. Overwhelmed to the point of death. And then Jesus, you see the personal relationship between him and his father. He says, "Father, if there's any way for John and Josh to have their sins forgiven without me going through being rejected by you and put the full weight of sin on me, if there's any other way, please." And yet, Juan, what does he say? He says right here, "Your will be done." So that's Jesus. Jesus submitted to the will of the Father for you and for me. Let's go on to the next section. While they were still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him." Going at once to Judas, to Jesus, Judas says, "Greetings, Rabbi." And he kissed him. And sometimes I'll say, "And John went up and said, 'Greetings, Rabbi.'" You see what I'm saying? Trying to personalize it. Jesus replied, "Do what you came for, friend." Notice he's calling Judas his friend. Then the man stepped forward. They seized Jesus, arrested him. With that, one of the Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him, "for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and who will at once put at disposal my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way?" In that hour, Jesus said to the crowd, "Am I leading a rebellion? They've come out with swords and clubs to capture me. Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled." Then all the disciples deserted him. And one thing I like to point out at this point is Jesus is aware of the prophecies. He knows exactly what's going on. The soldiers think they're in control, but it's not true. Jesus is in control. Then I would ask the person, how do you think Jesus is feeling right now? What emotion is coming on him given what just happened? And hopefully they'll notice that the disciples deserted him and fled. And you could even ask, have you ever been deserted by your best friend? Have you ever had somebody that you really thought cared for you completely turn their back on you or walk away from you? How did that feel? And just imagine, in fact, this might have been part of what was so anguishing to Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. He knew the ones that he loved, the ones he poured his life into, the one he's about to die for. They're going to walk away. And that's what they did. So now Jesus is going to go for, the trial took place in more than one phase. Let's read the first phase. Those who had been arrested, who had arrested Jesus, took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teacher of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and he sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I'm able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. By the way, we're going to be reading a scripture in Isaiah, which is a prophecy of exactly what's happening here more than 700 years before it happened. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied, "but I say to you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look now, you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered. Then they spit on his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah. Who hit you?" So we have Jesus denying himself. We have the emotional pain in Gethsemane. We have the betrayal in the garden. And when they have the false accusations and the mocking in this trial. And we could ask, how do you think Jesus felt as they were punching him? And sometimes when I read verse 67, and then John spit in his face and struck him with his fist. And then Josh came over and he slapped him across the face, because that's what we did. That's what our sin did to Jesus. And even though we're not there, we're going to read in Acts chapter 2 that Paul said, "This Jesus whom you crucified." It's as if you and I were in the room slapping and spitting on Jesus. Next, let's read what happened to Peter. Verse 69. "Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. 'You were also with Jesus of Galilee,' she said. But he denied it before them all." "I don't know what you're talking about." "Well, I'll put my name in here," John said. Then John went out to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." Then John denied it again with an oath, "I don't even know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then I began to call down curses and I swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And went outside and wept bitterly. And again, we see Jesus betrayed. And the thing is, Jesus knew this was going to happen. And Peter swore up and down he would never, ever betray Jesus. And yet, at his hour of closest need, that's what we did. Jesus died for us. But when people, asked us, I can even think of times when I was supposedly a Christian and I would hide my Bible when a non-Christian came by. Or I remember it in my college days laughing at the Christians, like, "What an idiot." Here Peter denied his best friend. He said, "I never knew him." You know what? I'm thinking that's you and us. We too have denied Jesus. And yet he went for the cross. We're going to skip the part about Judas for now. You can read that later. We're going to skip down to Matthew 27, starting in verse 11. "Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' 'You have said so,' Jesus replied." When he was accused by the chief priest, this is a second trial. Actually, there were a total of 3 if you look at all the gospel accounts. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they're bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now, it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time, there was a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. When Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message, "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, but I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded us to ask for Barabbas and have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," we all said. "What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called Messiah, the Son of God, the one who healed thousands, the greatest lover of the poor, the greatest lover in all time? What do you want me to do to him?" And then we all answered in unison, "Crucify him. Crucify him." "What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. We said, "Doesn't matter. Crucify him. Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." And in a very ironic response, all of us said, "His blood is on us and our children." Then he released Barabbas to them and had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. You know, we were given a choice between the worldly guy at work and Jesus, the Son of God. And who do we choose? We choose to befriend the worldly guy at work. We had a choice between Jesus and a bottle of beer. And we chose the bottle of beer. We had a choice between Jesus, who was about to die for us, and whatever it is. So at this time, we said, "Yeah, I would prefer this notorious, violent murderer. Yeah, I'd say let him go, but let's kill Jesus." Because, like we already read in Acts chapter 2, God has made this Jesus whom you crucified both Lord and Christ. You crucified him. Josh, you crucified him. Juan, you crucified him. And although you weren't there, in proxy, they were saying for you, "Let his blood be on our heads." And you know what? His blood is on our heads and our hands. We had the chance. And then what Pilate did here, and you could ask somebody how they feel at this point. Please, you know, give them a chance to share what they're feeling, what they're thinking. Probably, I was just lecturing. Probably it's better to do what I just did by asking some questions. All right, you ask a question, why do you think they chose Barabbas over Jesus? Why do you think that was? And do you think you would have done that? And if they say no, are you sure? You know, are you sure? Wasn't there a time in your life when you did choose blank over Jesus? And then there's this little thing at the end. It's in verse 26. He handed him over to be flogged. And probably Pilate was doing this because he did not want to crucify Jesus. He didn't want to crucify him. He was innocent. So he hoped, because these people are for blood, that if he flogged him, right, maybe that'd be enough. But when he brought him back, you can read in other gospel accounts, no. So they crucified him. And flogging is the most brutal torture it's imaginable. In fact, later on, we're going to look at a video clip from a movie about Jesus. We're going to actually see what that flogging was like. But it was a brutal beating which left the back in ribbons and could even be fatal. That's what Jesus went through for you and for me. He did it. And again, he could have stopped this any time. And he pleaded to his Father to stop it. But Jesus went through with it. This is what Jesus did for you and for me. It just boggles the mind. It says in Romans chapter 5, "Very rarely would a man die for a righteous one. For a righteous person, maybe somebody would give their life. But God showed his love for us in this. Jesus Christ died for the ungodly. That's what he did. So let's read on, starting in verse 27. We'll read through the crucifixion. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him. They put a scarlet robe on him. You have to understand, his back is just in ribbons. And there's blood pouring down. So you know what happens when you put a piece of cloth on some blood. You can imagine what's going to happen here. They twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand. They knelt in front of him. And then we mocked him. And we said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And then we said, and then we spit on him. And we took the staff and we struck him on the head again and again. We put the crown of thorns where the thorns are about this long. Jan and I have been in the Middle East and we saw those things. They grow wild there. And they pounded it into his flesh. And then we mocked him. And we took off the robe and we put his own clothes on him. And we led him away to crucify him. And as they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. They were offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, which would have reduced the pain of what he's going to go through. But after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking, and we shook our heads. And we said, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself." Of course, the irony is, you and I know he could have done that just at a snap of his fingers. He saved others, but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him, for he said, "I'm the Son of God." In the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him heaped insults on him. And, you know, this is what Jesus went through for you and for me. And here we see the physical pain, right? The physical pain of the brutal beating, the pounding of the crown of thorns into his head, and carrying the cross probably on his shoulders where the flogging had happened. He collapses, and then they carry it the rest of the way, and then they take large spikes. We actually have actual crucifixion remains like this big, and they pound it through his wrist to the cross. And then they pound one big nail through both of his feet and they lift him up. The most excruciating torture imaginable. And yet, as you read the different accounts on the cross, he's thinking about you. He's thinking about me. He's thinking about his mother. It's incredible. Okay, and then we go on. We're almost done here. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over the land. He was probably crucified about 9 in the morning. So now he's been on the cross for about 6 hours. 6 hours of the most horrendous torture. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Which is a quote from Psalm 22. Which reminds us of what Jesus said in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he said, "God, if there's any way, please let this cup be taken from me." Jesus is about to take your sin and my sin and the sins of the whole world on his shoulders. When some of those standing there heard him, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion, the Gentile centurion, and those with him who were regarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." See, we didn't recognize him, but these pagans did. Many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and Mary the mother of Zebedee's sons. This is what Jesus did for you and for me. And, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about the resurrection, some people's version of the cross study, I believe the Jesus study version of the cross study does spend a little bit of time talking about the resurrection. And we kind of don't leave people hanging in that pretty horrible, tough, emotional state. All right, now at this point, we suggest that you either show a clip from the scene of the Passion of the Christ, which is very, very intense. Very, very intense. It's not for everybody. And, you know, please get advice even from that person before you show it. But it will make it very real what it's talking about. It's brutal. It's the only Christian movie I ever knew that was rated R. That's what it's like. So I've occasionally read the medical account. I've got a version of it. You could probably just Google the medical account of the death of Jesus. Jan has a copy, so you can use that. You could watch it later if you felt it's more appropriate, but I think it's good because you can easily load one of these on your phone or something like that. Okay, got it? Now, we do have a couple scriptures that we typically go over here. I suggest that you actually do them because it's going to make the connection with the Old Testament. So now let's go to Isaiah 53, verse 3 through 6. So you can read more than that if you want. In my opinion, that's enough. Isaiah 53, 3 through 6. It makes the point we're trying to make here. Okay, and what we're doing here is we're making the connection to the Old Testament, and we're demonstrating what we said earlier, which Jesus knew exactly what was happening to him. Exactly. So this is a prophecy from the prophet Isaiah, probably around 720, 700 B.C., well over 700 years before Jesus was tried, convicted, and crucified. Let's read verse 3 through 6. It says here, "He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with grief, like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised and we held him in low esteem." Sounds familiar, doesn't it? "Surely he took up our pain and he bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for my iniquities. The punishment that brought Juan peace was on him. And by his wounds, Joshua, you are healed." All of us, all three of us, like sheep have gone astray. Can you relate to that? Yeah. "Each of us has turned to his own way, and God has laid on him all of our sin." That's what Jesus did. What's your response to that? What does that make you feel? What does that motivate you to do? Those are some questions I'd ask. And we're going to finish out in 2 Corinthians. And this is a great way to end the study. It's a great way to end the study. Probably most of you know this passage already. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. And we're going to ask a very pointed question. We're going to read this verse and we're going to ask a very pointed question of the person that we're studying with. Okay? It's this. "For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again." Juan, do you believe, according to what we read, that Jesus loves you? Do you believe that? Okay? Well, according to the scripture, what should that do to you? And Juan's a smart guy. He's going to say, well, it compels me. Right. What's that mean? It means it forces me. It has this effect on me, this unalterable effect on me. Why? Because he died for me. And that's the end of the study. All right? And so now what we're going to do, we're going to switch over. And we're going to let Blaine share some thoughts about the cross study. And then, and by the way, we have... I don't know why Matthew 20, 18 through 20 is there. Oh, where are my questions? There you go. We'll have these discussion questions. Let me not put it there because they'll think about that. So, Josh, go ahead and say what you're going to say. Okay? Can we make Josh big? But I have to stop sharing in order to... there you go. Go ahead, Blaine. Did I say Josh?
Yeah. All
right.
I said Josh a couple times.
Yeah, well, you know, you kind of look like him a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Hair's a little different.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Blaine.
So, I think John said at the very beginning, you know, the cross study is probably the study that changed most people's lives. And for one, it was, you know, it was impactful for me. It was convicting. But it was also, even though it's the shortest study, it's for me, it was the hardest study. And the reason it was so hard, because it called me to take personal accountability for what happened. Right? As John was adding people's names and stuff, and I think it's important when you're studying with somebody that they understand it was personally them that put Jesus on the cross. Because it's easy for us to think, even during our communion services, to make it a broad paintbrush of everybody. And it really, you have to bring it into yourself, right? When I did the cross study, I didn't have the, it was actually a pretty cheesy VHS tape. That's how long ago it was. But as John said, you know, after watching The Passion, it was, it was really an eye-opener. Of everything that Jesus went through. And I know the movie can only do so much, and I got to believe that Jesus went through so much more. I think just the emotional pain of being betrayed by Judas, losing, Peter walking out and denying him. I mean, these are the guys that he was best buds with, right? And to have that emotional pain, and then of course it gets into the physical pain, and then even at the end the spiritual pain when he cries out to God as he's on the cross. To me, that was impactful. It reminds me of a child crying out to a parent. You know, if you've ever had a child or a grandchild, and that's her, and they're screaming your name, and there's nothing you can do. It's just the most agonizing thing. And if you're a parent, you understood that when your children were sick and you want to take away their fever or their pain and you can't. And I know that Jesus crying out to God had to feel so much pain and sorrow. But because of what we did, we put Jesus and God in that position, right? And so to me, like I say, the cross is a very short study. But to me, it changed how I looked at Christianity, how I looked at Jesus. Because even though I grew up in a church as a young kid, you know, only thing you really think about with Jesus is the pictures you see of him on the cross. But I had the opportunity to read the medical account and the pain and suffering that a person went through at the time. And basically, they suffocated. And just to think that my sin put Jesus on the cross, that my sin made this whole thing happen. And I think that's when you're studying with that person, you want them to recognize that it was their sin. Again, don't paint the broad brush like, you know, this is what we did. This is what I did. Take personal responsibility that I put Jesus on the cross and my sin. So that's it.
Thanks, Blaine.
Yep.
Appreciate that. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to do some breakout rooms, except my PowerPoint won't forward anymore. Rats. Okay.
What?
Well, Joelle's going to set that up while I get my things going here. Okay. Sorry about that. We'll get it together here in the next few seconds.
There we go. Now you're getting somewhere.
Yep. There we go. All right. So these are the discussion questions. Joelle's going to send us into breakout rooms in the next minute or so. And let's spend about 8 minutes or so there. And the questions are this. Are you in touch emotionally with what Jesus did on the cross? Actually, for us. How about for you? And that could be, are you in touch with that, like, right this instant or in your life? You know, please apply that however is helpful to you. I'm being a bit vague there on purpose. And the second one, do you feel that Christ's love compels you in your daily walk with God? Okay? And let's not be all religious and say the right thing just because you're supposed to, okay? If it is, great. Fantastic. All right? So, again, do you feel like you're in touch emotionally with what Jesus did on the cross? And do you feel that honestly, Christ's love is compelling you in your walk with God? Okay? So we'll go there, and we'll come back in about 8 minutes.
Right, everyone. Breakout rooms are open.
There we go.
John.
We got Leo and Nora and John. Nice. I've been thinking about Jesus a little bit more because my dad's probably getting close to kind of, well, technically I guess he goes to a waiting place, but, you know, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, so we need to
get further. I talked to him about God a little bit. His Lutheran minister did as well as my sister's a nun, so he's thinking about God, that's for sure. He's gone to church his whole life.
Amen.
Good, we have four of us here. Okay.
I cannot see anybody.
Huh. You know, Vanessa couldn't see anybody either when she came to the thing today. I don't know why. I'm seeing Nora and Leo's picture thing.
My video is stuck. I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's get started. Who's going to share first?
Anybody?
I kind of already did a little bit.
The first question was about, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit tired.
It's whether you're in touch, whether you feel you're emotionally in touch with the cross. And yeah. The second one is, do you feel like it does compel you? Does it affect, you know, your discipleship? Yeah.
I feel like I'm in touch emotionally when I revisit the cross. So if I want to be more connected in touch. touch and aware and need to go through things like this when you did the cross study or watching some of the movies. There's like three that are really powerful for me and for my wife. And so I do feel I'm emotionally connected when I revisit it, when I'm aware. Other than, instead of when I'm just busy about my day and I pray and I have hard times, but I don't necessarily think about the cross itself. And then when I am emotionally connected and I am affected by it, it does make a change